You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. At length. Are you ready? The new Darren Aronofsky film, Mother. Everyone go.
I'll stop. Yeah.
Mother! Oh, God! Blood! Blood!
The Glenn Danzig story. Somebody had to say it. Just get it out of the way now, okay. Richard, go ahead. Start us off.
You know, I think every so often people, just because he's had commercial success with, particularly Black Swan and Requiem for a Dream, they kind of forget that Darren Aronofsky is one of
You're going to portmanteau his name?
He's probably the most obtuse major director of this era.
Yeah.
I mean, he is undoubtedly, if you put together a kind of, contemporary canon, he would be in there, like a shot.
With his sledgehammer.
Yeah. Mother is arguably his most difficult, and I think it's going to be most divisive film since The Fountain, and I think we're going to find that out this evening.
Yeah.
Looking around this room at multiple faces, many of whom are just going...
Only Allison could be here. You can hear her shrieking somewhere.
What and the where and the who? Yeah, this is not a... The simple introductory outline is that at its very, very simplest level is Jennifer Lawrence as an unnamed woman and Javier Bardem as an unnamed man.
An unnamed poet.
In a house together that she is reconstructing while he is trying to get over his writer's block. This is the simplest...
Ostensibly.
Yeah.
This is the simplest component. And this is, at a certain level, a relationship drama. And at 10,000 other levels, This is a film that you don't so much watch as you absorb, and then you spend a very, 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 very long time unpacking.
That's well said.
Yeah, and we just came out of it, except for fucking Bo over here.
Then in the third act, you go, oh, it's an allegory. I get it.
Well, no, hang on. But let's be fair. To go into a Darren Aronofsky film and not think this is going to be an allegory, because the man makes allegorical films.
Yes,
this is what he's always done. So
it's true.
That's not a...
Generally, they're a little bit more of a poser for me. This one, I spent the third act going like, I get it.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. It's you and me against the world, Richard.
I actually agree with
you. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stuff in this movie I really, really like. There's some stuff I'm just like, oh, wow. That's very well crafted. The camera work's incredible. Man, the fucking acting. But it goes way too long to say what it has to say.
I agree. It was too heavy-handed for my tastes.
Well, it's definitely heavy-handed, but I think that's partially why I enjoyed it. I mean, Robert said, I don't think that was a horror movie. And I get where you're coming from. But I felt very incredibly tense this entire time.
You could say it's a psychological thriller. I wouldn't think of it like, I wouldn't think of it like you would. I think that it's better. You're going to be more open to the movie if you're not looking for that experience. If you're going in there thinking you're going to watch a Rosemary's Baby, it's Buñuel, it's not Polanski, and I really do think you need to have that mindset going in, because otherwise your expectations are gonna get thwarted about halfway through the movie in a way that's frustrating.
The first and most of the second act, I was like, shit, this is like fucking Pinter. This is nice. I would like to see Aronofsky do the dumbwaiter now.
This is the thing. I think a lot of the references that you actually have to make are theatrical. There's a lot of Dario Fo in here as well, but then he also brings in references to, there's clear Fulci references at various points, which I think is why people have kind of glommed onto this as a horror film. But, this is Aronofsky just filtering so many different influences, many of them non-traditional. He is a very non-American filmmaker, and I think this is at the point, this is probably clearest at any point in his career that he's really rejecting a lot of the tropes of American cinema. This is super stylized at every level, from the narrative approach through the acting, through the design work, through the cinematography. This is, you know, this is a complete and controlled universe, and it depends whether you like it or not, I think, to a certain degree.
Well, and as someone who adores Ford movies, there, like I said, there's a lot in here I find to love. It's just, you know, by the, you know, the time the last explosion literally stops deafening you, it was
interesting, because it seems like you were much stronger on the first two acts, mm-hmm. and these guys seem like they were much stronger on the third act.
Well, my problem is, if I'm watching a story and there's no story, it's really hard to like a movie. But the third act kind of hits you with something really profound that goes, oh, okay. But if you're relying on your reveal to make up for the other 80% of your movie, that to me is not a good movie.
I would disagree, because I loved you have to pay a lot of attention at the front load of this film to figure out, okay, what the fuck's going on? Because they don't give you a lot of clues. It's very much like, you know, they kind of give you a little bit of like, okay, this may be a dream. There's, you know, obviously a
unreality,
a surreality to this whole bit, and that's fine. I've seen lots of very effective films that do this, and I think it, you know, like I said, the first part of this film, and to some extent the second part, it's, for me, it was really effective. I was very drawn into the story, and a lot of the reason that I was drawn into the story was because it is a, what the fuck is going on?
I did actually, you mentioned Pinter, and I was like, it actually, like putting things together in my head, it's like if Harold Pinter, the first two thirds, if he had done Repulsion.
Yes.
What it would have been like, because it's really kind of that hell is other people thing.
Yeah, and that whole...
And I started wondering, just like, is that what's, all we're seeing here is that this is this woman who's in hell, and she's being tormented by, you know, like, this is the ultimate hell for anybody who is not an extrovert. This is the introvert's hell, who's just like, who are these people, where are they coming from, and why are they all up in my shit? And I found that, and you know, even as an extrovert, I was like getting extremely tense and extremely uncomfortable watching this start to play out, as the movie is so firmly from the viewpoint of Jennifer Lawrence, that the camera rarely strays more than 6 inches from her
so
face.
So annoying.
I guess I don't get how a lack of story can be a compelling story. That's just so, that's the interesting duality of it, where it's like, there is no story. There is no story.
I wouldn't go that far.
She's walking around in a home, and people show up.
Arguably, the whole story is about a fucking story. You want to get right down to it.
If I can't follow it, then I'm not watching a story.
Well, that's one of the things I disliked about the movie, and that's in the 90s, I spent a lot of time around the poetry scene, and one of the things I started to hate very early on was fucking poetry about writing fucking poetry. And there's a, it's
so
just
meta.
Like, and yeah, there's some, I will give you that any artist on any particular given day could describe their artistic process as a horror story, but Jesus, man, lighten up.
Yeah, I mean, like, it just...
A horror story interrupted by lots of wanking.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely felt to some level, like, a little confused about absolutely what it wanted to be about on a metaphorical level, but then we just watched the thing. He's like, oh, well, Aronofsky says that Lawrence is a metaphor for Mother Earth, and everything else is about humans being callous and tearing the building apart, which I didn't see at all. You did.
Yeah.
Okay, I saw it more as sort of almost a feminist polemic that was kind of, that would be very difficult for feminists to watch.
Well, I think the thing is that it takes multiple themes that parallel each other. And that's something Aronofsky has always done, is echoes and ripples. And again, this really, the lodestone here is the fountain for that sense of, like, what is this? What does something we're doing here say about 20 other things that we're saying at the same time? And I think that sometimes he does over-egg the cake. I think that's undoubted. And even here, I think he does. But in this, I think he does go, well, you know, those consequences of ignoring what it is you're doing to the thing you say you love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the, you know, another part of the thematic structure of it is the destructive nature of artistic relationships,
sure.
which yeah. runs all the way through, and you know the intrusion of the audience
yeah.
into their world, yeah. and. One gets the feeling that if you had a chance to sit down with him and discuss this, I think he would, you know, some of this is basically a mea culpa yeah. for his own destructive habits. I mean, there's Javier Bardem in some ways reflects him as
100%
like, oh, reflects the fact that Tarkovsky is a well-known prick,
and, but not fond of himself either. I mean, there's a lot of
and that's the thing. It's just like, oh well, we're the old self-loathing artists, are we? Got it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely...
not the best kind. Saves you some work. Saves you some work.
No, they're not. They're the worst fucking kind.
Saves you some work on hating them later.
It has, a duality there as well, though, where it's both she's giving everything she has, and yet he is the one who keeps saying it. He's like, oh, I'm giving it all to these people. I'm letting them eat me alive. She's like, why are you doing that? But it's like, yeah, but that's what you're doing for him. At the same time, and if she's representing Mother Earth and he's representing Darren Aronofsky, I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Well, you can't nurture one without the other one growing, and the other one growing ultimately destroys you.
Right.
And it's kind of this vicious circle. And the other thing was, it also has a lot to do with like idol worship, and there's a lot of celebrity parallels in there, which is really interesting. Imagine like these guys, and I mean these movie stars have a baby. And I mean, they have to like cover it and you know hide and crazy yeah. shit happens.
She was in it for you know. Not a lot, but one of my favorite parts about the movie was Kristen Wiig and her character. Yeah. I thought that was very well handled.
Yeah, she did a good job, I thought.
It did make up for the, like, you know, extra 15 minutes of excessive riot scenes going on that I didn't really need.
Now, question being, though, like, I mean, no spoiler in this, but, like, the first hour and the second 45 minutes were the same story, just once she's, you know, got a baby, once she doesn't, but it's the same story again.
They definitely did reflect.
It was the same story. And then the endings were tied together. So to me, it was like, it could have been 45 minutes shorter and just had it happen. I don't know.
It did beg the question, why is there a gap in the middle where he chooses to kind of reboot it and start again? Not entirely clear on why it didn't just progress out without
because
that.
Because she has to be pregnant. So I really do think, it. You know what I mean? They need that. Spoiler.
Also
but I think, like... The film is so vague. It's so intentionally vague that it allows for all these multiple interpretations, which I think in some ways was like, to me, is like really impressive. He had this, obviously, this really tricky tone where they're acting sort of like real people, but they're all just, you know, they're all just symbolic of something else. But in the end, like, I feel like part of that started to get old for me because I was like, there's such a vagueness to the movie that I started to kind of, like, check out a little bit, even though I found the movie strange. I mean, it is I found it somewhat compelling, you know, mostly because it's so well directed. The actors are, especially like Lawrence, I think she's really good. Like, I think that her character is inherently submissive, and obviously, like, Aronofsky would listen and say, like, yeah, that's a choice. That gets, as a movie viewer, tiresome. You know, you're sort of waiting for her to take ownership of her agency and anything, and the movie is actively suppressing her. And in more ways than one, obviously narratively and the way the movie's constructed. But
frustrating.
I think the second half is really, really dazzling in a sort of like, whoa, what the hell kind of way. But the first half for me was like this weird meet the parents, like everything's awkward for like some episode of The Office for like an hour. And I was just like, it kind of got tiresome. Like I was like, this is really awkward. And it just goes on.
Maybe it's just because I do come from a theater background that, you know, that it awkwardness is a very important part of the modern canon.
It really is.
Let's go.
That's why I go to the movies. Yeah.
They should have cast Ricky Gervais instead of Ed Harris, is all I'm saying. You should have cast Ricky Gervais instead of Ed Harris.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's what it is.
One is that passive. No one's that fucking passive.
I have to say, I think the idea that a character has to find agency is kind of contrary to drama.
I think it's
not even a contemporary thing. I think it's something that's cropped up in the last 10 years. That, you know, the basis of tragedy is either having too much agency or having none at all. And I think this is about having none at all. And she does attempt to assert herself. But she knows it, but she has limitations on that.
Yeah, and I mean, that like, you know, that antagonism and yet, you know, sympathy between Bardem and Lawrence is one of the things that did work for me, you know? And yes, it does make you uncomfortable in a way that whenever you meet anybody who's in a codependent, fucked up relationship, makes you feel uncomfortable because it is.
I think it helped me get through that on some level because of that unreality aspect that early on in the film is setting up little elements that you're like, okay, not everything is like of this
earth or
normal that's going on here.
Powerful glass elements.
I mean, just that you would let all these people in your house you don't know, I mean, and they would all stay, you, and you would not react against
that. It really felt like you were watching someone's own personal hell. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the level of like actual hell, not like metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
and I found on that level the horror aspects of it, like that frustration was just part of it, of that, as you have building anger.
I think there's
and
tension, but I didn't find fear or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think I was uncomfortable, or I was upset, or I was disturbed, or I was weirded out, but I was never, like, afraid of anything that was in the movie.
And this being Aronofsky, there are, and I think people should be warned about this, while there is not what you would really regard as extreme violence, I mean, there's a couple of moments there are some very grisly moments.
And very distressing.
And, yeah, like, and I think if, yeah, there are, I know several people who love Requiem for a Dream, up until the final act. And if
Keith David says ass to ass.
Oh, it's not even that moment.
Arm abscesses.
Yeah, I think if you have problems with the last 10 minutes of Requiem for a Dream, to the degree that you really cannot revisit that film, I think this will have the same problems for you.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing. Aronofsky, he doesn't blanch from his vision.
That's the world's most subtle film.
There was a grimness to Requiem on the Dream that makes it me reluctant to revisit it all that often. My reluctance was this, is it's just very much like, well, yeah, I see what you're saying there, but at the end, there was no profundity whatsoever. And I was just like, yeah, the artistic process is rough, dude. I get it.
I just don't think it was as simple as that, though. I think you're oversimplifying it a lot. I think there's a lot.
Well, then he
here.
Should have done a better job of complicating the matter.
I disagree. I think there's tons to unpack here. I think that's just one aspect of it.
Yeah, I feel like the ending's what made it complicated for me.
Yeah.
Like, the first bit was like,
very ending is certainly squicky as hell.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we can go into that after, you know, because I don't want to get spoilers, but there's definitely, like, how does that even work out what happens?
Right. Yeah. Once again, we're dealing with something that is almost...
Who is the creator?
Yeah.
That is the question.
And there's actually a lot of religious themes that pop up in the last 30 years as well.
The whole movie
very heavily. And it's like, okay,
religion.
So to what degree are we also discussing all of these topics in relation to humanity and its relation to religion?
Oh, there are three very clear religious stories in here that I saw. There's probably five or six I watched.
Cain and Abel really early on.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just about we're going to do a religious allegory. It's about the impact that religion has overall on certain ideas, like, for example, Mother Earth, how religion can, be a form of destruction in itself.
I would agree with that.
You know what I do dig about this, though, is that it gets you talking about it. Like, I mean, I feel like an idea really isn't an idea unless it makes you think. And to me, some movies are just entertaining. Sure, you don't really want to talk about them. This, I could talk about this for a month and keep thinking on it, and, you know, it brings up conversation. And to me, that's a good movie.
As I used to call them, basically puzzle movies, where you're like, there's a lot of pieces and they're scattered and your job is to put them together. Yeah. But puzzle movies don't work unless there's enough of a structure that you're still interested while watching it. And I felt like this accomplished that. I was like, I want to rewatch this at some point, not immediately, because it is a tough watch. I mean, in terms of just being distressing. But, like, there's so many things going on that I kind of want to pick it apart and read other people's analyses of it. It's one of those type of movies.
I feel like I'd like to watch it.
I'm the guy who's watched, like, The Holy Mountain, like, 20 times, so don't listen to me.
Stoner.
All right, let's go to final thoughts. Yes, Rob, why don't you start us off? That's right, I'm putting the pressure on the Summers Brother.
Yeah, figure. I thought this is not a movie for everybody. That's definitely something that is very clear. I think if you're a person who, you know, is okay with sort of more difficult films, or things that are not don't have regular expectations, this is a pretty good one. There's a lot to really admire. I was certainly impressed by like the look and feel and of the movie, but I think it's, again, it's really going to be up to the individual person and your sort of patience for, you know, a giant metaphor of a movie. So I give this one, man, I don't even know if I can give it something. I give it
these are arbitrary reviews. You can say,
I know, I'm going to give it seven very weird pieces of meat.
Yeah, you can say,
so,
I give it fish.
Yeah,
pieces of painting.
Yeah, that's a lot closer to the way I feel about this movie.
Bob?
Well, you know, this has a lot going for it. It's certainly provocative, and I really, really admired the craftsmanship of most of it. Love the acting. And I'm just disappointed the end did not deliver to me like I wanted it to. I didn't, you know, maybe there needed to be a little bit more vagary for me or something to make me go like, ah, yes, that's something for me to chew on for a while. But it to me, it just came off as a little pat, and maybe that's just because I'm honing in on that one big allegory. You know, that said, I definitely think it's a movie that in a lot of ways is worth watching. And man, I absolutely loved the tension in the first part of this movie. That was one of my favorite things about it. So, on strength of that, I'm gonna give it let's say 7.5 unwelcome house guests out of 10.
Patience?
Wow.
I typically do not like these kinds of movies. They're not my bag. However, I do want to say that I appreciate how Aronofsky isn't just artsy for the sake of being artsy. He actually does try and tell some kind of a story as much as possible. There's a lot of themes that I think a lot of different people are going to cling to, whether or not you find that it's an allegory for a terrible abusive relationship, or it's an allegory for the introvert, or the religion, or just, you know, the whole Mother Earth thing. I think that there's a lot that people can identify with. Overall, I was just very uncomfortable. I think the movie is very uncomfortable. And it really fucking bothered me that she never wore shoes in the house. I don't know what it was, but I just wanted her to put on a pair of slippers so fucking bad.
She's not going anywhere.
Whatever, Quentin Tarantino.
I know, it was really irritating me. I'm like, put on some socks at least. Anyway.
No, that is gross.
I was really annoying.
It's a valid complaint.
Yeah. Seems like it would be drafty there, too.
I know, right?
It's so, all wood, stone.
It was just, and she's down in that dirty ass basement. Yeah. I mean, it's gross. I think that this is definitely a thinker. I'm going to give it 7 dirty feet out of 10.
There you go.
Yeah.
Phil?
Yeah, this is a weird one for me because I like the ideas going into it, but I felt like there were so many ideas, and if like he really had like a true sense of what he was trying to preach to us, you feel like he would make it more accessible so his message would actually reach people. And he goes and makes a profound movie that's unreachable to the masses for sure. If you look at like the actual regular user review, he's got just a slew of ones and twos. People aren't getting his message.
Yeah.
And to me, if you're trying to tell an important message about the earth and about how we're destroying it or whatnot, make it more clear maybe. I don't know. I mean, it just, I actually love the third act.
That was my favorite.
I thought it really drug on through some of the other stuff, but I mean, I liked it okay. I'll give it, I don't know, 6 out of 10 Anton Chigawa cattle braining guns. I mean, I don't know.
Why not?
I got nothing.
Richard?
I love that Aronofsky has made something that is going to have us talking for years. I think this is, you know, The Fountain, I think people just went in and they just wrote off as a romance and couldn't get into it. I think a lot of his other stuff has been, you know, either small enough or overt enough that, it, you know, you got it or you weren't the audience. I think this is just by the presence of Jennifer Lawrence, opens this up to a completely different audience who, you know, you were saying, like, they probably won't, they may not get it because, you know, he was deliberately opaque. To which my response is, catch the fuck up, audience. I think we are about due for audiences to be full on challenged again. I think that would be good for society as a whole if you go to the cinema and go, I didn't get all of it. Why didn't I get all of it? What was he trying to do? And hit them over the head. Don't make it subtle. And I think this, you know, by embracing the fact that he is making something that is allegorical, metaphorical, deeply surrealist, has that intense take on how he shoots Jennifer Lawrence. Nobody has shot her quite like this. Mm-hmm. And you know, he does shoot women in a very particular way. But it's not just a single Alfred Hitchcock-esque eye for a blonde. He does bring out different aspects of his leading ladies in a really remarkable way. And I think, you know, he gives something here that is going to go down as one of Lawrence's most remembered and discussed performances. I love that he basically went, I'm going to make this as difficult as I can. I think he gets away with it. I mean, I will be discussing this internally for months to come. I have to give this an easy 9 out of 10 insufficiently secured kitchen sinks.
Yeah, I think with Aronofsky, all his films are like inaccessibly accessible, if that makes any sense. Like, that's the idea. It is supposed to be challenging. He wants to challenge his audience. He's not afraid of that whatsoever. And I like that a lot. I've seen a lot of directors who fail miserably at it. And yes, I am the guy who also likes people like Lynch and Jodorowsky and stuff like that. But there aren't a lot of directors who try and do this thing or are any good at it. And I think Aronofsky is one of the very best. What makes his work more complicated is that he deals with such dark and disturbing themes in his work so often, or he's dealing with, like in the case of The Fountain, stuff that was just had a connection point that didn't seem to be one that was built for the type of audience the rest of that movie was made for. But that being said, I found this incredibly, like I said, both challenging and rewarding. It is a film I will be continuing to unpack. I'll be looking forward to reading to what other people have to say about this, getting in discussions, being patient with those that people you meet that you know you will, that'll just be like, whatever, that's the worst movie ever made. It's like, dude, like, pick your movies more carefully before you go into the theater. If you've read about Aronofsky and you're like, oh, that doesn't sound like he's for me, this movie's not for you either. This ain't The Hunger Games, buddy. This is Aronofsky. And for my tastes in particular, which I totally appreciate, his movies are not for everyone and no good piece of art should be. I give it 8.5 out of 10 squicky things in the toilet bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Squicky! That was the thing that squicked me out the most. I was like, oh, hell no. You keep your horror out of my toilet.
It was a vagina.
I worried about that. Mm-hmm. What if it was her vagina? What if it just dropped out? It may have been, out?
You know, because allegories.
Allegories. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners to oneofus.net, be a subscriber. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, being a subscriber is it. The long-term benefits of being a subscriber at oneofus.net have been proven by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Watch TV, but not too much. Remember to cast a wide net of types of shows you watch. Even reality TV may have the occasional gem to offer. Don't feel too bad that you have trouble finding friends that share your interests. You are amazing, and you should love what you love. Sure, in 20 years you'll look back at your favorite stuff and cringe at some of it, but it will be with an affectionate smile. By the way, I have no doubt that you probably look amazing. Even if you haven't found that person yet, if you believe in yourself, somebody is going to love you. I'm sure anime is great. I don't personally watch a lot of it, although some of our staff certainly does. You'll feel better in realizing that my lack of interest in it isn't me critiquing the quality of anime and affects your love of it in no way. Tony is probably not gonna show up. Yeah, we wish he would too. Love that guy. Taking it personal when someone likes something you hate or hates something you love in entertainment is understandable when young. But as you get older, trust me, there will be little that will make you feel more embarrassed about yourself than cruel things you said on someone's Facebook page about DC versus Marvel or whatever at 3 in the morning. At least hopefully. Write. Create. Do your own thing. And if you don't have the time, find the time. Try out the shows you haven't given a shot to yet on our network, like Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, Somebody Likes It, or Deliberations of Doom. We think you'll be pleasantly surprised. But seriously, trust me on the subscription.